all the weird shit I do and say. That's my favorite thing, that I'm not famous, no. And I'm never on TV, throwing up on an LA street. Nobody judges me, cause I'm not famous, no. Paparazzi, you're setting all time low. Paparazzi, they don't care where I go. Where my haters, where my haters? I don't got them, I'm not famous, no.
Good morning. You're listening to WMFO in Medford. That's WMFO Medford. And we are also known as Tufts Freeform, commercial-free, community-based radio, or Tufts Educational Radio. And you're about to hear a subset of that community base. We are now going to be, for the next 2 hours, socialist alternative radio, talk and music from a working-class, democratic socialist perspective. And we are here every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And we are today going to talk about victories more than defeats. Victories more than stalemates. We're going to talk about the victory of another $15 an hour minimum wage law, this time in Minneapolis. 71,000 workers at least will see their wages raised as a result. And we're going to talk about a victory over in Ireland against the criminalization of protest that's been a wave happening around the world, including in the United States, trying to make peaceful protest a criminal offense, trying to make the slightest inconvenience to the powers that be, to the bourgeois, to the capitalist class, to the forces of the state, etc. The slightest inconvenience as a felony, you know. And by the way, people have been studying this sort of criminalization of behavior, not just protest, in America. There's a guy who I really dislike in a lot of ways, but I'll plug his name, and you can find his book, Harvey Silverglate, an ostensible civil liberties guy, although very much not in some ways. Anyway, he wrote a book that basically said that every day Americans just going about their daily lives break three laws, at least, minimum. I don't know if it was three felonies or three laws. Anyway, we're here today, Social Alternative Radio, with myself, Jeff.
Diego.
And Tom.
All right. And Tom is also known as Tomrad, just for the uninitiated. Yeah. If you're a first-time listener, Socialist Alternative Radio, again, talk and music from a working class.
So, Jeff,
talk and music from, I'm doing the whole pattern again.
Yeah.
Talk and music from a working class, democratic socialist perspective. We've been on the air about a decade or more here at WMFO, and it's a great show, great opportunity to get out some, you know, unabashedly partisan working class and socialist ideas and information and ways to get involved and so on. And sorry, Diego, hit it.
So every time I jaywalk, is that breaking the law?
Jaywalking was probably one of those ones.
No, cars.
But it's not a felony, though. So I don't know if you meant felonies or whatever.
Let's not give him ideas. We got him on that.
Yeah, I think there's obviously among a lot of communities, especially people of color, especially black people, black youth, the idea that there's a just general oppressive net of criminality thrown on the community is not debatable. That's just there. But I would argue also, in addition to that, unfortunately, that being really horrible, in addition to that, anyone that finds themselves caught up in the dragnet, so to speak, in the system of law enforcement these days, quote-unquote law enforcement, is in big trouble. There's just so many ways to get entangled in the system and never be seen again in a decent shape. And we might talk about that today regarding immigration, crackdown on migrant workers, and so on. Am I allowed to tell that story about the Irish guy?
Huh?
Can I mention as a sort of foreshadowing the Irish? So along those lines.
My friend, you talk about my friend?
Yeah, if you think you are immune because you're not a person of color or something like that, Think again. Obviously, you can see examples of that on Facebook in terms of police brutality. You know, most of it is obviously against black youth, but it also hits many other ethnic if you want to go for racial categorization, all types of people.
They come after us.
And so here we go. We're talking before we went on air about the immigration crackdown, ICE crackdown, which at first under Trump was not even equaling what Obama did. Now I think it's starting to get up there, equaling Obama. The oppression under Obama's administration are getting worse. And Diego mentioned that a recent thing, which we'll talk about more later if he wants to, that he was involved with was horrible, oppressive, harassment and arrest by the police, but it included this Irish guy. Oh, no, that's a separate story. So you just know, you just have a friend who was Irish, you grew up with, and then all of a sudden he's been deported back to Ireland.
He's back in Ireland.
He was here since the 80s.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. And there was another
plumber, electrician. Yep. Did some jobs with him when I was unemployed. You know what I mean?
Yep. And there was a story like that. Not that guy, but another Irish guy who got picked up in a recent ICE raid. So they're telling that story. And some people think, and I can understand thinking this way, but I would have a different take on it. Some people think, well, this white guy's getting a lot of attention because he's white, he's Irish or whatever. And there might be a grain of truth in that, but it's also like people should know no one's safe. So to get white people to feel more empathy towards people of color, you have to point out, hey, you're not safe either. You might think you are, but you can get snatched up too.
First they came for the communists, then they came for the socialists, then they came for the Catholics, then they came for the Jews.
Yeah, a lot of people forget that now, though.
And it was just me. And there was no one left to help me.
No one left to speak, yep. So we're going to be talking about the $15 minimum wage victory in Minneapolis. We're going to be talking about what we're going to call, for shorthand, Jobstown, which is a place in Ireland, which will explain more its significance and as part of that criminalization of protest. But we're calling it a victory, too, because the courts miraculously ruled against the government. Court overruled the government because they didn't have any evidence. The government didn't have any evidence, really. And what evidence they did have, they fabricated, and they were caught up in lies during the court proceeding. So it would have been embarrassing for the court to not say innocent. And what was after that? What do we have after that?
Fatal police shootings.
But also we had
We have the
Ginger Jetson campaign. Ginger Jetson campaign.
Yeah, we have the truck driver strike in Port of Los Angeles.
Okay, well, that's
retail giants enable trucker exploitation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So indentured servitude through subcontracting.
So you guys keep talking. I have to do a technical thing here.
Yeah, so I just wanted to say about, since we did bring up Jobstown, where it is. Jobstown is a working class neighborhood in a section of southwest Dublin. So it's part of Greater Dublin, Ireland. Just wanted to get that in there.
Dead air. I'm hearing dead air.
Well,
Jobstown. Is that the
Jobstown? It was a couple of years ago. The then Deputy Prime Minister Joan Burton, who was in charge of a lot of she was in charge of a lot of the austerity measures that the government, the right-wing government of Ireland, was instituting against the workers of
Ireland. She's actually, Joan Burton is actually, I believe, a labor councillor, and that might imply to some progressive ideas and views and so on, but it doesn't actually.
Well, the
necessarily.
At a demonstration against water charges, they were going to try to double up and charge people for their water. Put water meters in, and all the people who are already paying water through their taxes, but it's a double down on them and make them pay twice.
When you think of Ireland, what do you think of in terms of the country in general? Think of the green, but also rainy, cold place, right? And here they are, in one of the most water saturated countries in the world, an island, in fact. They all of a sudden are jacking up taxes on water, making people pay for what used to be free, making people pay more for what they were paying for. etc. And it just made no sense to people. And it was in the midst of a lot of other taxes going on the working class. And Ireland is infamous for letting corporations colonize there without with low or no taxes. So it's obviously just like here has been a flip in the tax laws to put most taxes on working people and a higher percentage of taxes on working people than on rich people. In fact, in this country, I don't know if you guys heard on National Propaganda Radio recently, they were interviewing Warren Buffett. Buffett is a millionaire, and they make him out to be a hero.
The aw-shucks billionaire.
Yeah, they make him out, exactly, the aw-shucks billionaire. They make him out to be a hero and everything. But if you pick through his aw-shucks bullcrap, you basically do find little insights about that he admits his tax rate is so low now that it's lower than the woman that cleans up for him. He apparently has a cleaner. So her tax rate's higher than his. It might be aggregate taxes as well, for all we know. And then he mentioned a couple other examples of people like himself and Gates and so on who are touted as entrepreneurs, or I'm sorry, philanthropers, or all those purr words that make it sound nice. Philanthropy. Philanthropists, sorry, piss words. So anyway, he's got this big big reputation. Gates do all this philanthropy, and it's still a drop in the bucket. I mean, if you're listening to socialists like us and you hear us say tax the rich, I would hope that also implies, and maybe we should be saying explicitly more, tax the big corporations more. And taxing the rich will bring in a certain amount of revenue because they're so wealthy now, it's just unbelievable. But for any real deep-seated solutions to funding social programs and so on, it has to be taxed the big corporations that are constantly exploiting labor and the planet Earth to create more money. If Gates retired tomorrow with all his, well, he is retired, but if he retired more back into the shadows with all his money and we had a socialist revolution tomorrow, he could keep all his money. It wouldn't do much. It wouldn't really help the new society at all, and it wouldn't do much. And even now, under capitalism, seizing Gates's wealth, I wouldn't object to it, but it wouldn't do all that much. What would be important to take from Gates is his so-called ownership over mass social corporations. Yeah, means of production, exactly. Social production, so to speak, that he claims is private, or that the corporation owns, or whatever. What's really the people running the show, or a lot of people running the show through their labor and so on. So anyway, let's talk about 15 now. Do you guys, everybody here heard about it. Has the public heard about it? Probably not. So let's give a little history. 4 years ago, Shama Sawant, a member of Socialist Alternative, and you are listening to Socialist Alternative Radio, got elected as a city councilor. She ran as an open socialist. She ran as a member of Socialist Alternative supporter, other people supported her. She ended up getting union support and so on, got elected to a city council seat in a large American city, Seattle. How big is Seattle? It's not huge, but it's huge.
It's as big as Boston.
Huge, but not huge. Yeah, bigger than Boston, but not as big as L.A. or whatever, but still a huge victory, and it made headlines all over the country and all over the world. First socialist elected in, I don't know how long, to a major city.
Close to 100 years.
Yeah. And then she got reelected. That didn't make as many headlines. That kind of scared them even more. Uh-oh, first time it was a fluke, right? Ha-ha. Second time, she got elected with even more votes.
And this was after a huge mobilization of all the big corporate honchos.
Yes, she ran against huge corporate money and ran against fake progressives and everything else, and then ends up winning again. And this time, they didn't want to give Socialist Alternative that much press. And also, they're scared. They actually say that, you know, we are an army of red shirts was one of them. Stuff like that. Because, you know, people wear T-shirts with Socialist Alternative. They happen to be red, a lot of them. They say Socialist Alternative, this or that on them. They're not all red, by the way. But anyway. And now we're supporting by the way, this is not directly related to 15 in some ways, but in some ways it is. We're supporting a mayoral candidate who started something called the People's Party, but is progressive. And we're also supporting another city council candidate who's not in Socialist Alternative, who was in the Democrats, actually, but moved over to the left and now is running as an independent Democratic Socialist, John Grant. And basically, we are we created this space on the left in Seattle where people can actually see themselves getting elected as leftists or progressives more than in the Democratic Party machine, which is brilliant. That's really great.
Sorry, is this the kind of like what you called for when Trump came into power of a left wing what do they call it, like grouping, or should I say
coalition?
Coalition, yes.
Yeah,
like in the '80s during the Salvadorian Civil War and everything.
Well, what we did, that's a good question, but not exactly. I mean, that's more like what we did after Occupy. In 2012, Occupy, 2011, 2012, we were heavily involved in Occupy in different cities around the country, we being Socialist Alternative. And so Shama was heavily involved with that as well, as a member of Socialist Alternative. So we put out a call in Seattle, in the Washington State area, actually, let's run a coalition. Let's get 200 Occupy people to run for office around the country. I think it was around the country, not just Washington State. And nobody took us up on it, which shows kind of the political weakness of Occupy in a lot of ways, which we won't get into. Occupy did one thing very well. It got out.
This was 2 years?
2012, 2011, 2012. So it got out a lot of stuff about inequality, but it didn't really have a way forward, blah, blah. So we won't go into that right now. So no one took us up on it. Shama ran for state office, lost, but got 35,000 votes, which was a wake-up call. Like, wow, this is possible. You know, 35,000 votes is huge. With no money, basically, against the most powerful Democrat in Washington State, basically. So then we took it down to the city council level and won, despite all the money against us and everything. And then got reelected, which is, like I said, a huge thing. But part of that whole process of Shama getting elected was to take one of the main program points of a $15 minimum wage that she campaigned on and we campaigned on, and other things as well, but then take that and make it a campaign. And see, a lot of people on the left, they get into this false dichotomy of electoral politics versus mass movements, when often they are intertwined, and you cannot separate them. Even accidentally, they're intertwined. You know, some candidate gets elected, but gets elected based on fighting for a certain policy or a certain set of policies that then become, parts of protests and so on. You know what I mean? So you can't always separate the two things. So in this case, we started this campaign in 2013, 14. For $15 minimum wage, and very quickly won this $15 minimum wage law in Seattle, and it was the first one in the country. And that's the point I wanted to get to, as some history to show that now it has spread to other parts of the country. In most parts of the country, the initiative is led by Fight for 15, which is a group we support, which is funded by SEIU and so on. But the group that Social Alternative initiated and created, called 15 Now, is also involved in certain cities, just happened to get there first, like Seattle and also Minneapolis. And now in Minneapolis, after a string of, after some victories for $15 minimum wage, all of them kind of messed with by the Democratic Party, which is something we'll get into. They're not pure, like really, they're not the best laws they could be, but they're a step in the right direction. So just this past Friday, the city council in Minneapolis passed a $15 minimum wage law. So this is a big victory. It's going to get 71,000 workers. That's 23% of Minneapolis workers will get a $15 raise. Unlike some other $15 hour wage laws that have been passed, there is no tip credit, meaning tipped workers will still make $15 as their base and receive tips in addition if they want to, or if they can force their bosses to make that happen. And basically, that's the good news. Now, here's the and also the way this is being publicized, you know, hopefully will add to the movement around the country. There's also an index to inflation after reaching 15. Now, here's the problem, and I have to give some history again. Sorry for talking so much, but basically, you had the $15 an hour minimum wage, 15 now thing off and running in Minneapolis 2 years ago. And we started that and led that, right? And we still lead it. But, you know, we have other groups are involved and so on. So anyway, it gets to the point where last November was supposed to be on the ballot. And it was polling in the 60% range. In fact, I have a figure here. Right now, it's polling at 68% support in Minneapolis. Excuse me. So we get on the ballot, and we're about to get on the ballot. And the Democrats, who were all against it in the city council, except for two of them, and that's the whole city council, I believe, in Minneapolis is Democrat. They got together with the Republicans who had some appointed judges and state legislators, obviously, and they got the thing pulled off the ballot in November, so no one could vote on it in November. We didn't stop the campaign; we kept fighting for it. And at a certain point, because of the polling data, because of our campaign, et cetera, the Democrats started to come around, which is both good and bad. Good that since they control the legislature and since they control the city council, you know, we had to, that's the only way we can get through right now, and we wanted it now, right? Problem is, the minute they decided they were for it, or the majority, one voted against it. The vote was 11-1 on Friday. 11 voted yes, 1 voted no. When they decided to vote against it, they started immediately messing with it. So here's the bad news about, overall it's good news, but here's the qualifier. There's a 5-year phase-in for big businesses. So that means every year the minimum wage will go up, which is good, until it hits 15, but it won't hit 15 for 5 years.
So it'll be a dollar, whatever.
Or whatever, yeah, exactly. And then there's a 7-year phase-in for small businesses, which is really bad and unnecessary. And we fought all these phase-ins and everything. We fought, they were even trying to get the tip thing, you know, tip workers not included. We fought all that stuff. We won on the tip thing, but we didn't win on the phase-ins. And then once it reaches 15, the minimum wage will be indexed to inflation.
They almost let the big franchisers like McDonald's off the hook altogether. They wanted to let them off because the rule is supposed to be to apply to a big business, meaning 100 employees or more. But the franchisers were saying, well, we only have 10 here at our Mickey D's here, so we're not a big business. We're just a small family business and a franchise operation. But to allow that exception would have meant that the worst offender of all was completely let off the hook. And then thousands of people, and it also would be, of course, a really bad precedent.
And that shows to the other franchises, you can get off of that. Just say that, this store only has X amount, you know. That's like Family Dollar just went under. In the state of Massachusetts, there's a thing where if you work in retail, you get time and a half. But there's a little clause in that law. If you have less than 8 people in a store, they don't get time and a half. I found this out the hard way. I was working Sundays at this Family Dollar around the corner from my house. And I'm looking at my check and I'm saying, wait a minute. I've been working Sundays and I don't see here a difference between that Sunday pay. Oh, no. That's why I found out about the clause. It's 8. That's why we only have 6 people in the store. We don't hire beyond that.
Yeah, sure.
Well, don't put me on no more on Sundays, I told them.
They also have a lot more workers than that probably on the payroll for that store to cover all the hours, I would imagine. But, yeah.
Oh, well, they're no longer in business.
Yeah, there's stuff like that all the time. I mean, businesses weasel out of all sorts of things, small businesses, big businesses. But the other thing is, I believe...
They want to have they want to come back. The city wants to come back and with something called a youth training wage provision to add on to it, which would mean if you're considered a trainee, you don't get paid $15 an hour.
Right.
For an hour's
worth. You're under the age of 20, working less than 90 days. So that's going to lead to a lot of problems with bosses hiring kids less than 20 years old and working them 89 days or 90 days, and then kicking them out.
And all of the libertarians out there think, oh, well, look, you know, the real reason that we have so much problems with youth is because they don't have jobs. But well, they could have jobs if we didn't have these ridiculous rules about how much to pay them. We should pay them a little bit. You know, like when I was a kid, I only got a little bit of money for a part-time summer job, and that was fine.
Yeah, when you were a kid, 5 cents went a long way. You know what I mean?
Also, there's always a lot of lies in those stories, because when I was a kid, I was fortunate enough to get a union job, and I got paid a lot more than the minimum wage because it was a union job with union wages and benefits when there were more unions around. So the question with all these qualifiers might occur, why is Socialist Alternative supporting this? And that's because we feel it's a step in the right direction, quite frankly. We didn't have anyone on city council, so we couldn't vote against it. But we are supporting it as a victory because we're saying, look, this will this will lead to increases in the minimum wage every single year, and it will lead to 15. It will take too long. It'll take a long time, but it will lead to 15 with a the index to inflation. And basically, you're forced with this dilemma where if you vote against something or come out against something strongly because it doesn't have exactly what it should be, and you don't have enough power to force another law through quickly, you know, or force another vote through, then you're in this situation where the corporate media will just skewer you. They will just say, oh, look, the socialists voted against $15 minimum wage without explaining why. They'll just say, socialists are against $15 minimum wage. We can't be in that situation. We have to say, yes, we're for this, but the Democrats messed with it and screwed it up. Whereas we're for this, here's the positive parts of it. Here's some things we didn't agree with the Democrats put in, and we can fight for more now. And whether we can actually get the fight going to correct this law or add a new law or amendments to it in the future is an open question. I mean, not amendments is the wrong word legally. Whether we get a countervailing law, a better 15 law passed in the future is an open question. You know, so we'll take this for now and run with it as much as we can. But it was unnecessary to put in these qualifiers, you know.
When you mentioned we didn't have a socialist councilor on the city council.
No.
That may well change for the better with the Ginger Jensen campaign.
Right, because Ginger Jensen, who's running as a socialist alternative candidate for city council as all this is happening, is well known in Minneapolis as part of, she was director of 15 Now. It's known that we initiated this and fought for it. Although the corporate media, if you look at corporate media stories about this victory of $15 minimum wage law in Minneapolis right now, I have read four of them so far. Not one mention of Socialist Alternative. Not one mention of Ginger Jensen. So there's like a corporate media blackout so far that I've read on mentioning who really initiated this. And they're very afraid Ginger Jensen will get elected. So that's one reason they're doing that. We did run
a socialist and a member of Socialist Alternative for city council in Minneapolis in 2013, and he came within 300 votes of winning.
More like 200 votes of winning a
seat there.
Right.
And that was when the campaign for 15 Now was just beginning to get underway. This has been a long, hard-fought organizing struggle, and that organizing has been the key, consistent organizing and coalition building, and even solidarity with strikes, fast food strikes and the like, and other unions. That has been going on for a long time. These things don't just drop from the sky, you know. They are prepared, they are struggled for and built. And it's not a straight line. They tried to, as Jeff was saying, the governor put the kibosh, or a court put the kibosh on it at one point, and everyone was against it at one point because these politicians, especially the Democrats, they put their finger up in the wind to see which way the wind is blowing.
Well, the people were not against it. This consistently polled very highly among the people.
Right.
The Democratic Party, with two exceptions on the city council, were against 15 until they just flipped on it recently based on the movement for it. Ginger Jensen, J-E-N-T-Z-E-N, again, a member of Social Alternative running for city council, was executive director of 15 Now, very much involved in a lot of these protests and movement for it, very much involved in the movement for it. And she was herself a waitress in a restaurant, a tipped worker for a while. I don't know how long before that. She's pretty young.
But you see it. You see immediately that from, if you go to Ginger's campaign page, gingerjensen.org, GINGERJENTZEN.org, gingerjensen.org, you can see the planks of her platform, of her electoral program, which is a socialist alternative program geared to the concrete situation for working class and struggle in the city, in the Twin Cities, they call it. And already, just as an aside, all the people, the main candidates running for mayor of St. Paul, the other one of the Twin Cities, have now come out in favor of extending 15 an hour to St. Paul as soon as possible.
Yeah, those are, they call them the Twin Cities, I believe, because St. Paul's right over the river or something.
But that, but what, if you look at Ginger's campaign page, you're going to see, we won 15, now let's tax the rich. And linking that to all the problems in one of the most class-ridden, unequal, poverty-stricken, environmentally messed up areas in the country now is what a lot of people would say, oh, that's a city up north, that's they're doing fine.
Well, that's another angle on this, is that this was passed in, you know, there's just, there's a lot of false narratives and paradigms put out there by the corporate media, and one of them is that, well, the country is very conservative in the Midwest and South, etc., and only on the coast do you find these progressive areas. We know that's garbage from our own organizing, and here was a city. Here's a city that also shows that's a lie, smack dab in the middle of the Midwest, Minneapolis, and you know, a good chance of a socialist getting elected to city council there. We'll see how it goes.
Do you happen to know when that election is, Jeff?
I believe it's in November, but I'm not sure. It's good. That's a very good question. We were talking before we got on air. Tom had gotten this thing from Facebook from a member of Social Alternative named Teddy Shiba Babwa, S-H-I-B-A-B-A-W.
Oh, yeah, we had him here a couple
Shiba Babwa. Yeah, and Teddy... yeah, Teddy's a great guy, and he...
Shababa.
I'm pronouncing that wrong, I guess. I'm sorry. He says the following, very, very apt, very what we were just trying to explain. He said, the most significant victory for the Minneapolis working class in decades. He's talking about the $50 minimum wage law being passed on Friday in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in the U.S. By the way, I say in the U.S., we do have international listeners, by the way. So, and we will have some international news coming up. Anyway, first... this is the first $15 minimum wage in the Midwest, brought to you by Revolutionary Democratic Socialists, meaning Socialist Alternative. The corporate media and establishment liberals will try to hide this fact, so we will be without a scintilla of shame or false magnanimity to blare it out as far and loud as possible as we can that Socialist Alternative played the principal initiating key organizing role through much of this process in Minneapolis. So what he's saying is basically, obviously, we're not going to get any credit for it if we don't talk about the reality and the truth of what happened. It's not going to get out there. However, of course, none of this would have been possible without our 59 coalition partners among unions, workers' centers, and other progressive organizations. So, and right away, after the victory, it wasn't like, oh, gee, we won, let's relax, because it does have some problems, some, you know, it could have been better, but also because it's not the only problem. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, if you lose social benefits, as we have been, and you have to pay for every little thing, even if you get your wages increased, it gets eaten up by other costs.
One worker said, this will mean I'll have $5 an hour more in my pay. And he's a single parent. He said, I can buy my seven-year-old the things that he wants. Not just the things that we need to just simply survive, but the things that he sees other kids have, the things that he needs to have a rich young childhood and to grow up well.
Well, here's what Ginger Jensen
said. That's a concrete benefit, and people go, well, you know, we should keep that in mind, that this is a real benefit. This is not pie in the sky, even though it's got flaws. This is a real monetary shift of wealth from the upper 1% to the working class in Minneapolis.
Yep, I agree. Just what you started to read, Tom, from Ginger. This is about like the day after the vote. We won 15, now let's tax the rich. when we first launched 15 Now Minnesota 3 years ago, a movement to win a $15 minimum wage in Minneapolis, many in City Hall claimed it was too high, impossible, and outside the role of city government. Mayor Hodges of Minneapolis flat out rejected the idea, along with most inside City Hall. And that's like almost an understatement. It was like all the Democrats were against it at one point, and two sort of came around a little bit. We persisted and brought together a powerful coalition of social justice organizations, unions, faith groups, neighborhood organizations, and even supportive small business based around grassroots organizing, protests, and strikes. Now we've just won a historic transfer of wealth to the 71,000 lowest paid workers in the city, like Tom mentioned. And then this is a victory that disproportionately impacts women and people of color at a time when Trump and the Republicans are hell-bent on carrying out hateful right-wing policies that affect our city and our ward. That reminds me of what you said, Diego, that we were, what were we saying about Trump and all that stuff? I forget how you phrased it, but you were...
Well, when he got in, off air or...
No, just on air, just a minute ago.
When he got in, I think we did a show and you mentioned about having a coalition
of left. Keep the Trump anti-Trump protests going.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go.
Regardless of all, you're a Democrat or, you know what I mean? It's just kind of like...
Yeah, you're right. Yep.
It's a moment of... how can I explain it? You were saying, I remember you told us a story of...
United Front.
The Klan
United
that Front, came to Boston and all. You've never seen so many left...
Right.
Even Democrats and, you know, like...
I didn't see any Democrats there, but I'm sure there were some.
Well, up left, even though we're, you know, there's like the Socialist Party and, you know, all the groups. Yeah. Even the Communist RCP, you know.
Well, see, the funny thing about the Democratic Party, or what, I don't know if funny is the right word, but people have to understand, the Democratic Party is not a real political party in the sense of how most of the world perceives political parties. It's not a membership-based political party. You can't join the Democratic Party. You can register to vote as a Democrat and then go vote however you want, you know? And the people that are at the core of the Democratic Party that sign legal documents and so on, they're just an elite. They're just the big business types. There's rich people that were either elected as Democrats in the past or that just somehow got brought on as advisors and stuff. You know, there's no accountability there. There's no structure. They have structures, but they're basically toothless. You know, they're like they invoke them when they want to. Like Massachusetts, that has a lot of registered Democrats, they'll go ahead and have a convention, right? And they will elect people to go to the convention, but anyone can walk in the door to the where they do the election and the convention thing and say I'm a Democrat or whatever, you know. And
well, you see this also then, when there's even giant protests, they're here and gone, and they're and when the speakers at these giant protests, like the March for Women and in Boston, which was one of the biggest demonstrations, of the whole history of this city, and one of the biggest in American history, and it wasn't alone. There were big demonstrations all over the country. They were a lot of Democrats getting up and going rah 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 women rah rah. But what happened afterwards?
Right.
Where did all that go?
They encouraged it to go into the Democratic Party. Again, what does that mean? It means to go into this shell, this electoral campaign machine, and go for the next elections. So this appealed to some upper middle class people who could see themselves as Democratic Party candidates, but it didn't go much further than that. I actually overheard a conversation of someone that bought into that, said, just the whole thing. Trump made me angry. I went to the demonstration. I'm going to now run for something or other in some bourgeois part of, I think it was Belmont or something. So they did what they wanted to a certain extent. They got probably an influx of upper middle class people into there where they, you know, can use more people to run as candidates or more people to serve as, workers on candidates or staff on candidates. But what I'm getting at is that you have a party with no membership base, so you can't hold it accountable to anything, really. You can't join and change it the way Sanders is claiming you can change it, and others have tried in the past many, 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 many times. It's like America is dominated by capitalism. As Marx said, the ruling ideas of any age are the ideas of the ruling class, so that would be the capitalists in this country. And their whole god is short-term maximization of profit, and the whole way they see the world, including whether it's climate change or their own coffers, their own bank accounts, is short-termism. They want immediate returns, on their investments and so on. And so they're looking short term all the time, and it doesn't lead them to a very profound understanding of how the world works or anything. They're very much into, well, I'm only into the facts, empirical facts, this fact, this fact,
the numbers.
This fact.
Just give me the numbers.
Yeah, without understanding how the numbers fit into the process at work, where it's leading to, where it comes from, all these very important things that Marxism, by the way, does take into account as a methodology, as a way of analysis and a guide to political action. But anyway, that trickles down, unfortunately, that kind of attitude that's taught in our schools and so on, empiricism and so on. And
I've noticed lately on CNN and other basically on CNN, they will have an interview with somebody, a congressperson, somebody from the House or a senator, and they will put behind their name, they will put in parentheses D, or they'll put in parentheses R, but they won't even say from what state. Uh-huh. So it's sort of like there's just D's and
right,
R's.
Right, that's the universe. That's the universe.
It. That's the universe.
And that's part of what I was getting at, but what I was really getting at was the fact that the thinking, I from anywhere. The thinking is that the way we're taught to think does not lend itself easily to thinking outside of the box you just talked about. You know, why can't Americans learn? Why can't Bernie Sanders learn that reforming the Democratic Party doesn't work since it's been tried so many times? And one reason that a lot of Americans can't learn that is that they're not taught to think about history in a critical way. They're not taught to think about institutions and systems in a critical way. They're just taught to think about something right in their face.
They don't question
the personality,
question.
The person. I don't know about parties, but I like that guy. He's a nice guy, like Charlie Baker, Charles Baker. You know, how many idiots in Massachusetts are going to vote for Charles Baker because he's a nice guy? Not knowing that whole persona is a narrative created by tons of people working on that narrative, working on that persona. I met the guy. He's cold-blooded. He hates $15 now. He hates the $15 minimum wage. By the way, Massachusetts, Charles Baker hates the $15 minimum wage. Don't vote for him. But that doesn't mean I'm saying vote Democrat either, because the Democrat, there's a $15 minimum wage bill sitting in the Democratic-dominated, completely dominated legislature. Massachusetts sitting there going nowhere.
Well, you see what he did to us, you and me and Seamus.
Yeah, you were there when we met him.
Well, right? He was campaigning. We asked him, and Seamus asked him clearly, what do you think about the... Oh, it's fine the way it is.
What do you think about $50 minimum wage?
He walked away.
It's fine the way it is.
The cameras are there.
Are you talking about Walsh or
Baker?
Baker.
Well, Walsh doesn't say anything about
November.
It.
I'll never forget the date.
When I criticize Baker, I'm not saying vote Democrat. I just said that. Walsh is a complete fool. The Globe just had a front page article about how much money... I know you know this. I'm just using it as a rhetorical thing. Walsh is getting millions and millions of dollars from big business.
That's the mayor of Boston.
Yeah, he let GE in into Boston here with the tax breaks. One of the richest corporations in the world.
And he walks around to Dorchester the other day. I was seeing the news because my mother's watching the news, so I have no choice to see the dumbed down news. Anyway,
it is
him shaking a hand, an African American little kid. You know, like you know what I mean, little photo op, and that's it.
Yep. Well, the other thing,
off to his limo he goes.
The other thing is with the way that a lot of American workers think, and I don't blame them, because there is a lot of propaganda, a lot of miseducation in the educational system, and so on, and the news, of course, the propaganda from the news. But is that we don't have in historical memory, and really never have had a mass workers' party like a communist party, socialist party, labor party, left wing party, progressive party of a mass size in this country. Than a real left progressive party, then that alternative just doesn't seem to be out there. And Americans are also taught to be very inward looking to America and not seeing right across the border in Canada. You have the New Democratic Party, which is that which started out that way. You have the Quebec Solidaire, which is a definite party to the left, not mass party, not part of big business. You have in Mexico many left wing parties that aren't part of big business. And that have been mass parties in the past, and are seem to be going that way now. I'm not thinking of the PRD so much, by the way, in case you're wondering. It's Morena. PRD is kind of hooked up to big business.
Moreno is for more.
Moreno,
left,
sorry,
progressive now.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So anyway,
I hope he gets in. But if he gets in, it's gonna.
Isn't that the name of the party too, or is it just an individual?
It's individual. No, it's actually I thought it's movement something something. It means something.
Yeah.
It's not like pre Partido Revolucionario Institucional.
Yeah.
Institutional.
Yeah.
Then you have PAN.
I have to read more about Mexico. But there you go.
Watch out for PAN.
I'm a victim of the system too. I don't know anything about Mexican politics.
But
right over the border.
It is just I'm as more split familiar as with
Europe.
We are,
but in Europe, the French elections got some media in this country. It was kind of surprising how much media I heard about the French elections. And it was
because the socialist was in the first round.
It was pretty clear that Mélenchon, this guy Mélenchon, left winger, who started a left wing party called he had already started a party called the Left Party or something like that, and then he started a movement called France Insoumise, which loosely translated is something like France Unbowed, like we're going to stand up to the big businesses and all that. This guy almost won. He almost got in there. He got 20% or 21%. And if he'd gotten a little higher, he would have beat out the second round person and then been in a fight with Macron, the guy that won, who's basically a smiley-faced Thatcherite, sort of like Trudeau in Canada.
Union busting.
Yeah.
Well, my friend from Morocco is like this guy. He was the other day, went to Morocco. We were in businesses. We was like, shut up.
Macron, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's horrible.
We went over there with the prince. And, of course, my friend hates the prince because he's anti-monarchist.
Right,
you know?
Right.
You don't understand it. Morocco still has a monarch.
I know, yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And here he is with the they don't like that. I don't like you see you with the guy who's my enemy.
Macron is I made the analogy to Trudeau. In Canada, because Trudeau is this youngish politician. Macron, I believe, was fairly unknown, if I remember correctly, in France. He gets elected mainly as a protest vote against Le Pen, a vicious right-winger, fascist even, daughter of Le Pen Sr.
Da Vinci.
What was her name again? What's her name? Carolyn?
Marie
Le Pen. Yeah, yeah.
Marine Le Pen.
She's like the Marines on a bad day run by fascists. Anyway, so she gets people vote for Macron, but there is a section of French society, you know, that buy into this entrepreneurial talk, positive, happy talk about everyone can start their own peanut butter company or something. I don't know.
This is what we
could all make cupcakes.
This is what the one guy who voted against this is what the one guy who voted against the one city councilor in Minneapolis voted against the 15 now bill that passed, thankfully. He said, well, you know, in my district, we have a lot of people who want to better themselves by minority people who want to start businesses, and this is going to be a barrier to them to start businesses, which is like saying, you know,
they want to go to heaven too.
Yeah,
they pray a lot too.
We're not going to be able to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, quote
no,
unquote.
Unless
we put our boots on the necks of people and don't pay them a living wage ever.
The thing about the bootstraps is where you put the boot afterwards. In order to make money, you got to put it on other people's throats. It's called exploiting labor, and that's what capitalism is all about.
The guy says, you know, it's everybody needs to be happy. Us exploiters need to be happy.
You are happy.
Now that we're here going towards the birthday of the nation, this nation was basically came about because of the genocide of the Native Americans and this economy
and
built on the backs
of
slaves.
That's right. I was thinking about that this morning. Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
And then
happy 4th of July.
And one thing that doesn't come up very often is that the supposed free people became slaves by a different name, indentured servants who could never get out from under, which is the same today with these truck drivers in L.A.
Well, I mentioned this before on the show. There's a book out now that's, it's kind of popular in a way, I guess, in terms of its circulation, called White Trash. And it was a woman named Nancy Eisenberg, I believe, is the author, who wrote this book. It's quite big. I haven't finished it yet. And in the beginning, she goes into what other historians have already looked at as well, is the very beginnings of European colonization in the United States. And she found, based on other scholarship, like Theodore Allen wrote about this. He was a working-class scholar, working-class intellectual who wrote about early slavery. He's dead now, but... that initially they didn't have a distinction in their indentured servitude logs between skin color or anything. There was no racial distinction. You know, you were just an indentured servant. This is before slavery started.
Mm-hmm. Which, if and people that, don't know yeah. what that means, it means that business interest paid your way over to be an immigrant to the United the American colonies.
Yeah, you had to pay them back, or you entered into a contract with some once you got here. Because what happened was, one thing she looks at, I don't know how much original this is. I don't care, but I think some of it is original. She looked at a lot of the records of who came here in the early days, like Jamestown Colony and all that stuff. And we're taught it's people. I just heard this on National Propaganda Radio. People fleeing religious persecution came here, and that's why they came here. Well, wait a minute. There was the rapacious newborn capitalists that came here or sent people here. To looking for gold and slaves and timber and all sorts of other stuff. You know, they came here to exploit, in other words. Then there was these colonists come in. Again, the capitalists funding this stuff, or the newborn capitalists, whatever. And they brought with them not people that were fleeing religious persecution, usually, but people they wanted to get rid of over in London or wherever. In other words, the dregs of society. The poor that were in poor houses and so on. One way they had a whole theory going of, hey, let's get rid of them by sending them to the United States. So the United States sort of like, remember that thing, a lot of people know Australia was populated by criminals. The United States is not far from that. The United States is the original, actual big numbers of the population, not just the Mayflower, but I'm talking about the big numbers of that started to come in the 1600s, were the dregs of what was left of feudalism and the beginnings of capitalism in England. And they just wanted to get rid of them. So these people were vulnerable over here, very, very vulnerable, and they were made into indentured servants. A lot of them, but initially, before 1670, there was no race-based slavery. Everyone was just labeled as a person, as an indentured servant or whatever. And then they wanted to separate all these people that were getting together.
But then America.
They wanted to get slavery going, and they came upon they did the skin color based on skin color. They tapped into the slave trade that happening in Africa, and boom, from there. So no, I'm agreeing with what you're saying. I'm not trying to mitigate it. I totally agree. America is based on the genocide of Native Americans, which was happening during the whole period I'm talking about.
But then the Americas back then in the early times, you talk about not just England, but also you have the Dutch.
Yes,
you have the Spanish.
I'm including them.
The French.
Yep.
You know, so there's a lot of... It Portuguese. Wasn't America as we know now.
Yeah.
Portuguese.
No, but I'm including a lot of that... I'm not just trying to keep it to the English. A lot of that original settlement was not fleeing religious persecution, the narrative we get. It was get rid of the poor from Europe and send them over here to be cheap labor, or just get them out of our face in Europe. Because they had huge unemployment, huge, you know...
That was their solution.
Okay. That was their solution. And that took the form of indentured servitude, then took the form of slavery, then took the form of slavery based on skin color.
And it was also the beginning of the era of the British Empire.
I was reading the Black Jacobins about white servants fighting with the slaves.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was these revolts even in Haiti.
Yeah, Zinn writes about that a lot,
too. Or mulattoes, people like my skin color, you know what I mean?
People, so there was a lot of... Zinn writes a lot about that happening in the United States. There was a lot of... runaway slaves hooking up with whites on the run from indentured servitude or from criminal charges and so on.
Which is not taught in our schools.
No, not at all. One thing about July 4th, though, is that despite... So in certain parts of the country, slavery is not being used or not being used nearly as much as down south. So, and indentured servitude started to die out. I'm not sure why. There was good... I think this book actually addresses that, but I can't remember the arguments. Starts to die out. I don't know if it's from revolts or whatever. Maybe it's people running away to the frontier. I'm not sure. Then what happens is that you do have the Revolutionary War take on a significance for some of the common people. They just see it as getting at all the repression they're feeling, you know, and not necessarily connecting it to slavery and everything, unfortunately. Although, I don't know, the early parts of the abolitionist movement might go back that far. I'm not sure about that. I have to study that. But, you know, to the time of the Revolution or before. But anyway, the Revolution took on sort of a working class character to the extent of who did the fighting, as usual, you know, who did the dying. And so, as a result, after the war, a lot of working class people in America, a lot of small farmers and so on, took the Revolution as something about the average person having power and revolting. Again, you know, yeah, there's contradictions there. What about the slaves down south? What about, you know, the Native Americans, you know, and maybe some few made those connections, but as far as I can tell from reading, most didn't, right? But still, in areas where the Indians were already assimilated or whatever, in areas where there wasn't much slavery, it took on kind of a character where, according to a communist author I read, July 4th was considered another sort of labor holiday for a long time in the United States, from like, you know, 1800 or something to whatever. So it wasn't just all pure nationalist, the way it's fed to us now, nationalist entertainment and so on. You know, it was took on, the average person saw it as something to celebrate against oppression. You know, and of course that would change over time. Civil War came and so on.
Dulles, Frederick Douglass, I think is his name, the free slave.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He did a real famous speech.
It's not our holiday, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Great speech, yeah.
That speech is...
Why I'm not celebrating the 4th of July.
If I was to go to the Espionage and say that speech real loud, you know what I mean, on a microphone, I'd probably get killed.
Yeah, you're right.
And NPR is not featuring that this
year. No. They're not.
Never mind Frederick with that Douglass. Kid. Beep! Yeah. We're going to censor this one.
Well, that's what I was thinking about earlier.
Neither are all those right wingers on the, you know, they do that big celebration.
The Tea Party.
In D.C. with the fireworks and everything, and they get all the most right wing people in Hollywood to be the hosts.
Ooh, really? I don't know that one. Yeah. But see, it's interesting. I was thinking about the same thing this morning also. Is what, you know, I was thinking about early American history, like we were just talking about. Then I was thinking about just what you said. I didn't think of Frederick Douglass, but I thought of, like, well, so how do I deal with this holiday? If I'm black, how do I celebrate this? No, I don't.
Well, we have,
I don't celebrate it.
The new
indentured
servitude is even worse. The new slavery is even worse in the imprisonment of blacks in this country.
I don't celebrate it as a I agree. I don't celebrate it as a nationalistic holiday anyway.
If do you need day off? I was like, I don't celebrate July 4th, so it doesn't matter.
I like having a day off, man.
He had his looking like. I just told, you know, like.
Well, I like having the day off. I got to admit.
What do you mean? Doesn't matter.
It's strange. It's always been a head scratcher for me, because we always are supposed to celebrate revolution on the 4th of July, the American Revolution.
Yeah, but all revolutions are bad.
But all revolutions are bad.
Yeah.
And the only revolution that we're allowed to even use the word is our own.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, how did that get so deeply
national propaganda,
ingrained?
Yeah, national propaganda radio was saying it was the greatest revolution ever that led to equality and all this stuff. I was like, there's no equality. The greatest revolution ever was the Russian Revolution.
I'm going to celebrate. When is that, October?
Yeah, October.
That's when I'm going to celebrate.
And you managed to mess, the capitalists internationally managed to derail that eventually. So,
Mind the French Revolution.
Oh, the French Revolution went further than the American Revolution.
Oh, the Paris Commune.
Yeah,
the
Paris Commune, Spanish Revolution in the 30s. There's a lot of them. German revolutions in the parts of Germany in the 1970, 1923.
The Cuban Revolution.
Yep. A lot of anti-colonial revolutions. See, a lot of anti-colonial revolutions ended up in Stalinist-type governments, because that was the model that seemed to work for them. But it didn't work, ultimately, obviously. But it's understandable, and they did throw off the colonial powers, you know what I mean? So it was anti-imperialist, at least. And by the way, I brought this book because of July 4th. I didn't know what the show was going to look like today. I thought I was going to be alone. I'm glad you guys showed up. I was going to read excerpts from a book called, that I mentioned on the show before, from 2006. I'm not going to do that right now, but I'm just saying what the book is. Overthrow, America's Century of Regime Change from Hawaii to Iraq, by Stephen Kinzer, who takes some of the larger yet still not very well known imperialist invasions led by America or done by America. For example, I just randomly turned towards a chapter on Allende in Chile, which we've talked about on the show before, 1973. Vietnam is in here, of course, etc. Vietnam's well known, but a lot of them are not, like the overthrow of, you know, the invasion of Hawaii and overthrow of the government there, and so on. Philippines, invasion of the Philippines. So maybe some other show.
And
I'll read
Puerto Rico
that.
Now. Yeah, Puerto Rico's now mentioned. The whole thing.
Or participating in trying to put down the Russian Revolution.
He doesn't go into that because Kinzer, unfortunately, is a liberal. There's no doubt, no way around that. But I don't think he goes into the Russian Revolution. And that's probably purposeful at his point. He really doesn't want to... support, do that, but also it is a century.
Supporting Chiang Kai-shek.
Yeah.
Against the Chinese.
Invading 19 armies, invading Russia and supporting the White Army right after the Russian Revolution. Yep. He doesn't mention that.
Taiwan's the most, I heard the other day, the most defended, most funded. Like, we